The MSU Department of Theater's production of Shakespeare's Scottish play begins tomorrow night at Fairchild Theater. Current State's Melissa Benmark joins us now to tell us about the play. Are you planning to tell us its title?
Yes, but Mark, there are actually many people in the world of theater who will not say the word Macbeth. It's widely thought to be associated with curses and bad luck. I talked to the director of Macbeth, Dr. Anne Folino White, and asked her this week about taking on this dark and bloody classic.
We chose to do Macbeth as part of our graduating cohort of MFA actors' thesis role projects. There's probably few roles like Macbeth and Lady Macbeth that are a combination of extraordinary character traits to play. Lady Macbeth, of course, goes from a loving wife to one who's devoted to her husband's ambition, to one that is driven to madness by the acts that he and she conspire to undertake. Macbeth, of course, goes from a heroic warrior to quickly letting ambition take control of him and driving him to a different sort of madness, one that doesn't result in his suicide, but one that results in his tyrannical control over people and, of course, leads to his death.
Tell me a little bit about your cast.
Well, the leads, as I've mentioned, are Sarah Gurka, who's playing Lady Macbeth, and Andy Head, who is playing Macbeth. They are MFA, graduating MFA actors, and this is their thesis role. It also contains Duncan is played by a female MFA graduate student, and Banquo is played by a male graduate student. We have a cast that also contains undergraduates at all levels. Some are first years and we have seniors, and there's a mix of people in roles. One thing that's really exciting to me about the casting is that we have cross-gender cast, roles that are typically played by men, so that Duncan is no longer the king, but now she is Queen Duncan. Donalbain, who is traditionally Duncan's son, is now Duncan's daughter. We have women in roles such as young Macduff, which was a son. And what we've done with that is not worked with gender politics in the sense of, oh, what would it be like for a woman to play the role, but rather embraced, or more so embraced, the idea that women are just as ambitious, just as brutal and soldierly and capable and authoritative as men. So we've played with those kinds of politics, and that men are just as ambitious and capable and sensitive and vulnerable as women.
In 2015, are theater students still keen to do Shakespeare, or is it hard to find people who are interested in something that isn't modern?
Well, our students are in love with classical acting. Not just Shakespeare, but ancient Greek theater, Restoration theater. It presents to them a challenge that takes them away from the typical realism that they work on every day and that they're most comfortable with. And I think our students love that challenge. I think for audiences, it's exciting when, and this is what I've hoped we've accomplished, when a Shakespearean piece doesn't feel distant emotionally, doesn't feel like you're walking in and looking at a museum piece, but that becomes relatable and an exciting, fully embodied world with emotional portraits that we can understand and relate to.
The play has been presented occasionally in modern settings. I found one British production that had Macbeth in fatigues as a modern military officer. So will you be doing sort of a period presentation, or have you moved it to some other time and space, or what's the deal on that?
It has been moved in time and space to an otherworldly context. The world of the comic book and graphic novel, and we've done that. So the time and place, it's not the future, it's not the past, it's a world unto itself. One way that I've described it, though it doesn't look this way, is that when you look at a story like The Hunger Games, it's in a world that isn't our world, simply, right? Or when you look at Harry Potter, it's not set in the 1990s, it's set in the world of Harry Potter. And so it's a world complete unto itself. It's a world that for us aesthetically resonates with the comic book world and the graphic novel world. And the reason that I looked to comic books and graphic novels for inspiration is because humans have extraordinary emotional drives, and there's a great sense of urgency. And comic worlds tend to be worlds where magic is real, that witches or not necessarily supernatural beings, but other than human beings, sentient beings that aren't only animals, live in that world, and they're recognized in that world, and ghosts are real. And I really was inspired by the comic book world in that sense, so that we could truly embrace the magic rather than trying to explain it away, but just say, this is a world where ghosts do appear and daggers come before you and witches can change shapes and manipulate you. So that's what you'll see.
Your set designers must have had a riot with that.
Yeah, we have this massive set that's comprised of multiple stories, levels made of scaffolding. We have a lot of projection art for the ghosts, the apparitions, the dagger that appears, and as the witches conjure sights before Macbeth's eyes that are rendered in the graphic novel style. They're gorgeous. And the set is sort of epic on the scale. That's the other thing about comic books. They're epic on a scale, right, in terms of action and style that Shakespeare is as well. And so you'll see that in the set and the costumes and the projections.
This is a very dark play, obviously, about murder and corruption and manipulation. It also happens to be one of the most often quoted plays possibly ever. And you know, lines like double, double, toil and trouble are part of everyday speech. How do you deal with the fact that your audience kind of, you know, already knows the words and, worse yet, may have heard them in the context of a Disney cartoon or something funny?
As a director, I deal with them in two ways. The first way is that I make sure the actors are saying the proper lines. I give line notes and the stage managers give line notes like crazy. I also have worked with the actors to make sure that they're playing the moments rather than playing the fame of the line. And from playing a moment like the double, double, toil and trouble moment, it's a sense of diving into what the witches are trying to do, right? They're trying to bring Macbeth before them. They're trying to tell him tales that are riddles that will tempt him further, yeah, and build him up as they break him down. And so we really, really focus on our individual characterization and our individual, how we've sort of developed our particular perspective on the story. So Lady Macbeth's Unsex Me speech, which might be the most famous speech, is really a painful one in our rendering of her, and one that she's not easily committed to, one that she struggles to make that decision to give over herself totally to helping her husband become king.
It strikes me as just having a ton of modern resonance that these supernatural creatures come and say, hey, you're going to be king. And he says, hey, I'm going to be king. And then he starts killing people. I mean, it's almost like the culture almost of fame and power. And what do your students make of that? Have they made drawn any parallels between kind of the modern world of fame and power and this play?
Yeah, I think that we have drawn a lot of parallels. And I think there are a lot of parallels. I think the major one that we've talked about the most as a group of collaborators is the fact that when people think that they are entitled to something, right? Because that's what the witches say, you're going to be given this. And from that moment on, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth believe that they are owed something. And that belief drives them to fulfill that promise without a sense of ownership or responsibility for it at the same time. And by that, I mean, it's the sense of, well, we were fated. We have to fulfill our fate. Our fate's going to happen regardless, which is a lie. It's an absolute delusion that you are owed something, that you are promised something, that once you are promised something, it's out of your control. And so that absolving oneself of responsibility really resonated with the cast and with the actors and with me, because a promise is a wonderful thing, but it also can lead you to a sense of entitlement that is damaging and unfounded, really. Yeah.
Dr. Ann Folinoid, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.